and then half an hour we have mincha. Let's spend a half an hour together in what we'll call the questions of the day. Living in Israel, should one move to Israel? Of course one should move to Israel. The question is only when one must move to Israel. It's a machlokas of time between the Rambam and the Ramban. As my Rebbe put it, Rabban Soloveitchik, he said, according to the Ramban, it's a mitzvah chiyumis, you must move. According to the Rambam, it's a mitzvah kiyumis. Means you get mitzvah points, you're not required to do so. If you're not required to do so, then it's a judgment call. Those who can move to Israel can afford to live here and make a parnas here and do what they can to help the Mekadoshim Shemayim here, should certainly do it. Those who either can't make a living here or doing, forgive me, a Kiddush and Shemayim in a superior way in Golus, so they should not feel any guilty conscience to doing the Ratzon Hashem in Golus. It's not an obligation, according to this opinion. It's a fulfillment. There are many fulfillments. The Kodesh Baruch Hu is not come and say, you must fulfill this way, and that way. The whole point of being a fulfillment, not an obligation, is you're not obligated. So the Kodesh Baruch Hu gives every person some leeway, flexibility, in how that person to do that Avodas Hashem. How, where, when, what. It's all part of the flexibility that's built into the system of being an Ovid Hashem. Can one listen to non-Jewish music? Depends. If it's classical music, which is not church music. Classical, nice. Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. So that's mutter, it's beautiful. And all those things, it's hetagama. But if it's some of this modern music, which is literally vulgar, explicit vulgarity, everything is off color, everything is disgusting, everything is tame, it's absolutely prohibited. Yes, sir.
A lot of music that's like borderline, so how
do
you define
it? I'm on the borderline, whatever's on the border, stay away from it. Yes?
What about Hebrew songs that take
Ganesh tunes? Oh, they had 3 million people listening to one of those. I tell you the truth, I watched them too. How could you not watch it? 3 million Jews can't be wrong. I never heard of the Goyish tune that they were parodying. Never heard of it. It wasn't such a rocky tune, if you ask me. I like Shlomo Kalbach better. But I don't think anything wrong with this. That the tune, the way it was sung by the Maccabees, I think they're called. I thought it was mutter to listen to them. Okay? Watch it. Okay? Next. Why don't we learn the way Chazal instructed? In Chumash, the Mikra, and the Mishnah. You go to Zilberman here in the old city, they do it that way. I mean, why don't we? I don't know why we don't. I'm not.
They do Lashon HaKodesh, they have the Chumash and Mikra, and some Mishnah, and how the Mishnah figures.
So the rabbi answered the question. Next. Secular college with a learning program. The word secular is a very secular word. I'll answer you directly. There are two major issues with secular colleges. In particular, colleges which have dormitories for the campus life. These issues are, respectively, we say it every day in Kriyat Shema, V'lo sasuru achrei levavchem v'achrei einechem. You shall not stray after your hearts and after your eyes. Says the Gemara in Brachos, end of the first parak, Achrei levavchem zuminus. What does that mean? That you're going to think bad thoughts. There's a pamphlet called Orthodox Assimilation of College Campuses. It was written by two chevra, Gil Pearl and Yaakov Weinstein. One went to Harvard, one went to MIT. And they debunked the myth that you can go with impunity to a college campus as long as there's kosher food available and there's a minyan available and be immune to any spiritual dangers. It's the other way around. They tell their story about a professor in Harvard who was, I think his yarmulke is bigger than mine, his beard probably could be longer than mine, and he gets up there and he says, you don't have to really believe in the revelation from Sinai, it's all literary work, it's a nice, and people fall in, despite being in yeshiva for 12 years in New York, and 2 years in Israel, in 2 weeks they're gone. How can I believe it? You know why? Because no one ever challenged them. here. No one ever prepared them for the onslaught of the false hashkafas which we're going to receive from very articulate spokespersons. And they just fall by the wayside. It sounds crazy to me, but they're both saying to aid them. They're saying it happens all the time. It's one danger. That danger exists truthfully even in a non-campus life, if you're commuting from home. But if you're in the campus, you're far from home, you don't have your father and mother to talk to, you don't have your rebbeim, it's more dangerous. The second one is even more, this I do believe, Achrei Nechem Zeznus, this is the Gemara Brachos. The immorality in college campuses is so rampant that, I mean, they're co-ed dorms, they're co-ed bathrooms in the dorm. I'm not telling you what goes on in the college dorms. How do you expect to send someone to such a place? In my opinion, it's absolutely prohibited. You're not permitted to be in a makom tumah. It's a makom of Gilui Erevos. You have to have siyag for Gilui Erevos. How can you go in there? I don't see how anybody can go into these places. If anybody has to, must absolutely attend the secular college, in my opinion, if you have to, I'm not going to quibble with you. Don't stay in the dorm. Stay either in your own house, or if there's that's not feasible, it's too far away, find what they call off-campus housing. But that way, everyone else is off-campus housing. That's even worse than the dorm. Your own off-campus housing, far away, where you're just by yourself, away from all that jump that's going on. Yes, sir. Floor, yeah. You know, the Gemara tells us, "Ein apotropos la'arayos." You have to stay so far away from a crumb of chametz, you have to stay further away from arayos. Okay, that's what answers that question. Okay, intermarriage. If a family member is intermarried. Oh. If not attending the wedding could make a chil Hashem, can I turn it around? It's backwards. Attending the wedding is a chil Hashem. The word chil Hashem is one of the most misused terms I've ever heard in my whole life. A chil Hashem. One of Abraham tells a story about a guy who didn't want to use the Eruv, so he put a talus over his garments. The guy walks up and says, chil Hashem! Huh? What is a chil Hashem? He's wearing a talus. You're embarrassed with a talus in your street in your hometown, so you call him a chil Hashem? The term is abused. It's abused. I would say it's a chil Hashem to go to the wedding. A Jew is marrying a non-Jew. How can you go to such a wedding? Now it is true that there are some authorities who maintain that times have changed somewhat. Not that we've mitigated the prohibition, chas v'chalila, but the fact that it used to be considered so beyond the pale. A 1,000 years ago, and it's recently as 70 years ago, 80 years ago, if a person would marry out, they would sit shiva right away. Rabbeinu Gershom did it, according to one version, and I know members of my extended family that did it. Guy married out, he was crossed off the map. Family members did not know he existed. They did not know that he existed because their grandfather never mentioned his name. Because he married out, is off the globe. That's how it was in America. Today, because then intermarriage was a rare occurrence. Today, intermarriage is the majority of Jewish marriages, Rachmana Litzlah. Doesn't mean it's any less of a violation, but it could be that the person who's doing it doesn't realize that he's leaving the fold. Yeah, well, I met a girl in that same college campus. My son, my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, is a chron of the Rochel. Told the story in public more than once. Someone came to him and said, Gevalt, Gevalt, Gevalt. My son met a non-Jewish woman who wants to marry him. So he said to him, well, where'd you send him to school? He went to a college campus in the Midwest. This is it. This is yet in the 50s when things were, you know, more or less kosher. So he met a good-looking, blonde, non-Jewish woman. And so he says to the fellow, what do you expect? Another Gemara Brachos. Ma yasa ben velo yechto. You take a guy, you put him into that situation. What do you expect from this boy? So they cried together, and he probably married her. Who knows? Maybe there's some kind of bogus conversion. Who knows? Terrible. Terrible. If a person has to go, he has to ask a shayla. If a Rav Godel will say he's allowed to either go to the wedding itself, or to relate some way to the intermarried party, which is different than they did years gone by, and the first one is much more difficult than the second one, then I can understand it. There are those poskim who say that way. Okay, this takes care of this page. Okay. Is it permissible to kiss a woman on the cheek after shul? After shul. Part of shul, a new part of shul. My shul, I daven in the shul. It's not part of the davening. As a casual greeting, not as a show of affection. Can the Rav elaborate, please? There is a serious issue. A serious issue involved over here. It is true that the Torah prohibition that the Rambam mentions in this context is limited to shows of affection, and maybe even more than shows of affection. It's a dispute within Shita Rambam. And therefore, if in fact this is a casual greeting, sounds, I don't know. Then it would not be a Torah violation according to the Rambam, but presumably it would be a rabbinical violation at the very least, because it's very hard to distinguish between what's casual and what's not casual. Kiss a woman on the cheek, casual. I don't know. People
kiss a man on the cheek.
I don't know where people are coming from these days. It seems to me that as a practice to be avoided at all costs. At all costs. Now, it can be avoided. Just don't do it. Just say no. Just don't do it. There is a related question, which is a little bit more nuanced. People have relatives who are used to expressing affection to female relatives, expressing affection to male relatives with this kind of kissing, hugging, kissing, etc. Depends who the relative is. The Rambam writes, with respect to a sister or an aunt, aunt means a blood relative aunt, that it's a dava maguna, maisa timshim, and the way the Bach explained this only would be usur if indeed some kind of a yetzahara he has for this relative. If he doesn't have a yetzahara, it's not technically prohibited. It's wrong and it's silly. So if it's only wrong and silly, then Gedolei Hador, Moshe Zatzal, would say, listen, what are you going to do? The ant comes and comes at you. So there are three choices. One is a karate chop. I don't recommend that. One is to duck out of the way and she goes sprawling. That maybe. That's right. You didn't do anything, shave on that. And one is to be karkarolam, she gives you a. So if it's a relative of a sister or an aunt, there's certainly room to be lenient in this respect, because it's not really an issue. Rambam says it's a dava maguna and nice timshim, so okay. It could be the times that change in that respect, that I can be much more flexible. But it's limited to those relatives. Can't be done to non-relatives. Someone asked me, my mother's friend, that's part of this culture. They want to kiss me. So I said, okay, your mother's friend is 30 years older than you. Next thing you know, your mother's friend's daughter is going to come after you. She's your age. And the same I'm saying, you have to watch out for cousins. You're allowed to marry a cousin. That's crazy. You can't allow these kind of things with respect to cousins. It's only sisters and aunts that the Rambam speaks about. That's the examples that she gives. Yes, sir.
Is it better for you to let them kiss you rather than you?
That's what I said before. You just be just sisters. Yes.
Is it better if it's only
and by marriage is not. I don't see any. And by marriage is different. I wouldn't allow it. Yes.
Grandmother,
it's a mitzvah to hug her. It's a mitzvah to kiss her. Your grandmother, your mother, mitzvah one day, your daughter. That's a mitzvah. Because that, the halacha says, that we assume. Because it's a horror, and it's an act of chiba. Oh, please, I didn't mean to be misunderstood in that direction. Please, I hope I am going to hear that. That would be that. Yes?
What about a handshake with a
non-related
woman?
A handshake. Oh, slowly. Handshake. So recently, I read in some of the various that a handshake is yehoreg v'aliyah, rather die than shake the woman's hand. So just get ready. Kiddush Hashem. In my opinion, the reason for it, is that we know that Gili Arai is one of the big three. There's a concept called Abizrai. Abizrael means the ancillary. It's a modern Hebrew word, abizrim. If you need accessories for your car, abizrim for your washing machine, this is accessories to Gilead Arise. They also be Yehoreg V'aliyah. So if you consider shaking a woman's hand to be an accessory to Gilead Arise, it's arguably Yehoreg V'aliyah. However, Rav Moshe is a tshuva. Rav Moshe writes in his tshuva, someone said that he saw an Adam Gadol shaking the hand of a woman. He says, "Kasha lismoch al zeh." It's difficult to rely upon it. Why is it difficult to rely upon it? Because maybe, because he's saying for this Adam Gadol, for him it was what's called in the Gia shalom b'derechiva. It was not affectionate. It's like going in the subway in New York City in rush hour. Rav Moshe says it's mutter. You get crushed like sardines because it's not affectionate. It's almost hostile. Okay. But shaking hands, it's a little bit more nuanced. It's hard to know. Maybe it starts off as being purely casual and it ends up being affectionate. So therefore it's preferred to avoid. That's what Moshe writes. But that means is that if you know for 100% that it's not affectionate, it's only casual, so at least technically speaking it's permissible. I have Adis, reliable witness, who was in Sora Moshe himself, shook a woman's hand when she put her hand out to him. So Rav Moshe was saying, for the average Jew, it's kosher this mechazeh, but maybe it's going to turn into something which is affectionate. Rav Moshe knew himself that for him it wasn't the problem, so he wasn't going to actively shake her hand, but she put her hand out. He shook the hand. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, so I'm a witness to that, did exactly the same thing. He gave the woman what we call the dead fish. You know, dead fish. So that's okay, if you ask me. But it shouldn't turn affectionate. I've seen affectionate handshakes too.
So why do we allow any leeway at all if it's so large?
You don't want to do it? You want to Kiddush Hashem? I mean, I'm not telling you what to do. You're by Yahweh. I'm giving you a head. You don't want to take it? Don't take it. It's nothing wrong. I'd rather you. I'm giving you a head. Yes, sir.
What about if it's a family, like a hand that's not related to you?
Your father's aunt should also be okay. It's a blood relative. That's the rule. Blood relatives are okay. Are again okay in a pinch. Direct up and down is het gamar mitzvah, and non-blood relatives is not much different than your than friends. It's a problem. Yes.
I want to focus on the shul aspect of it. I was sort of like veering slightly off, but I know that you're not supposed to kiss someone in shul.
You were with the kissing in shul aspect? Oh my goodness gracious me.
I'd say it's not something to the shul, so I was also told that it's not something to hug in shul. Is that also?
No, it's quoted in the Ramah that you shouldn't kiss in shul because you only should love HaKadosh Baruch Hu and shouldn't love anybody else. Believe me, that issue is less than that. Less than infinitesimal compared to the issues of Arayat that we're talking about. Believe me. Yes.
So adoption
is a very shvera parsha. It's a very difficult thing. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Olam HaShalom, was very, very strong against any leniencies whatsoever when it comes to with a yichud, seclusion, or affection with a with an adopted child. It's printed in the Alter Poskim. Oh, the Tzitzeli has certain leniencies, but it's very difficult to rely upon. Yes?
What would you say about advocacy when it comes to an elderly person?
Elderly person?
Back in America, we used to visit
old age home, the big mitzvah. Yes, yes, yes. So, you know, you're 20 and she's 90. So, it's safe to assume that it's not the chalila v'chas, lo sikbu legalas erva in the literal sense. So in those kind of cases, you have to, again, it's still better to avoid.
That person getting himself in, he's going to visit, he knows it's going to happen. He doesn't have to go visit.
So that's the question. You're going to visit somebody, you're fulfilling a tremendous mitzvah, gemilas chasar, these shut-ins, there's no one pays any mind to them, or they're in senior centers, but no one cares about them. Tremendous mitzvah to lift their spirits. So the question is going to be, weighing that mitzvah, lifting someone's spirits, which is a mitzvah of gemilas chasadim with a capital gimel and a capital ches. You have to worry about the issues of Genval. That's a judgment call. You have to know who the person is, what the nature of the chesed is. I can't give a generality on that. Yes?
So I understand, obviously, that touching or any form of hyphen is right. But in today's age, more modern Jewish world has come to a thing where boys and girls are in school together and camp together. Don't you think that that in a sense leads to all these things? Because back in Europe...
I'll answer you with one word. Yes.
And is there any way we could maybe curb this?
Yes.
All right, what would you suggest?
Don't go to those schools or those camps. That's it's very simple. It's obvious. Yes. Loud or loud, I can't hear you.
Is a person thing where the son should kiss their father's cheek, half in the leader,
Really? Persian thing? They should do it in Persia, do what the Persians do. Maybe the Persians don't have that many. Yes. Do you know about Plato's life? Do you know about it? Go online. Watch out, there's a filter. But Plato did many disgusting things. Okay, yes. A few more. Time's running out. Is it allowed to copy CDs, download music for friends without buying the CD? That's a whole tumult. There's a Sefer, which is 800 pages about this. Put out by Cole and Netanya. I have it in my house. 800 pages. He quotes different opinions on it. So I'll answer the different opinions on it. Number three. Can a woman say Kaddish for a close relative? There's a minig Yisrael quoted in Pesachei Teshuva and Chavos Yahr that women do not say Kaddish. And I believe strongly in keeping them in Hagim. So in my shul, that's the official minig, is that they do not say Kaddish. If a woman is saying Kaddish quietly, we're not going to give her the karate chop. That's what I went before. But if she starts saying it loud, the people will complain. It's not our minig. So they get a little bit insulted and they go down in a different shul where they don't let them say it out loud. We try to stick with our own minhag. Four. What place is there for engaging in modern literature, culture, novels, politics, and the life of a ben Torah? Following sports. All right. There's a problem. The problem is that a lot of the modern literature and culture, as opposed to some of the more classical, is, again, Tomei. First reading Shakespeare. Shakespeare, I went to high school, from high school, they taught Shakespeare, no problem. It's considered a classical work. Shakespeare. They still teach him in high school, Shakespeare?
Yes.
All right. Is it okay? You thought it was okay?
No.
It's okay. To be or not to be, yeah. It's very, very good. It teaches you, it opens your horizons, it gives you knowledge of things. Okay, fine. That's classical culture. But some of the modern stuff, I'm told that it's so permissive and it's so what they call postmodernism, which is really non-judgmentalism, pure cultural relativism. There are no absolutes. Nothing is disallowed. You can't judge me, and everything goes. That whole idea is terrible for us. We have to try to stay away from that as much as possible. Sports. The sports used to be neutral. You can do better things with your life. Now, sports is unfortunately linked to some of these immoral activities, both in terms of the open knowledge that the sports heroes engage in these things. Look, you think Babe Ruth didn't do it or whatever, but it was kept quiet. Same as John Kennedy was kept quiet. The world was kept quiet in those days. So then you could be involved in politics and be a John F. Kennedy fan or a Mickey Mantle fan, to be his contemporary. And what they did on the side, no one knew about B'shaita. Today, it's up front and center. It's so perverse. I would try to stay away as much as possible. How is the concept of a mamzerus fair to the child? It's not. It's called dimas ha'ashukim. That means that the person is an ashuk. He's someone who's been, unfortunately, victimized. He's a victim. It's a victim. You want to know why the Torah Kadosha introduced this status of the mamzer? I can't answer. One could argue, I'm just purely speculating, it's a deterrent. A deterrent. Who would have the chutzpah to bring into the world a person who's going to be stigmatized for life? Should be a deterrent against Gilearites? One could argue that way. But when it comes to any deterrent, someone who's not deterred creates a disaster. It's not fair. But it's what fundamental differences exist between Torah Derech Eretz and Torah Umada? Torah Derech Eretz is a mission of Pirkei Avos. Torah Umada is a slogan you find places. I don't know, in some certain schools. I think that for those who created the phrase Torah Umada, they may have had a little bit of a different thing in mind. Maybe that is more, either more quantitatively, spending more time on it than the Torah Derech Eretz, or maybe more qualitatively, that it somehow has a greater importance. I've always felt that the whatever phrase you want to use, the Peshad is, as my Rebbe taught us, there's only one ultimate value. The value is Torah. And whatever else you're doing, call it Mada, call it Derech Eretz, we're not opposed to it, we'll even encourage it, but only in the service of Torah. In the service of Torah. Rabbi Chanan put it in an interesting way in his Kovach Shira. It's printed in the back of it, Chelik Beis. When it comes to Torah, the ideal is Torah Lishma. When it comes to other things, Derech Eretz, Mada, Chochma, etc., it's primarily Shalom Lishma. In other words, it's not Lashem the Chochma itself. No, to enable you to better understand the Torah, to make a living, so you should be able to subsist, you should be able to learn Torah and support Torah. So in that case, the two phrases are almost interchangeable. Is it proper for a man to wear a wedding ring once he is married? 3 minutes. This is a 3-hour schmooze. We live in times, I'll give you the very short version. We live in times which perhaps face the greatest challenge on what we call women's issues. Some call it feminism. It used to be called women's liberation. I recommend you read Rav Moshe's Tshuva, Orach Chaim Chelek Dalet Siman Mem Tes, written to Rabbi Kellermer from West Hempstead, then from Brookline, Massachusetts. A very avant-garde town, academic, culturally forward-thinking. And there were problems that the women didn't want to, were upset that their Potiphar's man Gurama, and they wanted to be chayiv and all this kind of stuff. For Moshe writes, if you want to say you're chayiv, you're a kofir! It's kfira! Kadosh Baruch Hu exempted women for reasons of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Rabbi Moshe gives a suggestion. Since women are the ones who bear the children, they're better equipped to raise the children. So the Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to do that very important work, Shem Shemayim. So he exempted them from Talmud Torah in an intense way. He exempted them from Zman Grama. And all the other differences, I believe, between men and women can be attributed to the same distinction. There's not enough time to go into this right now. Seems that the idea of a wedding ring for men is a manifestation was called today egalitarianism or feminism. She wears a ring, he wears a ring. in certain weddings, he gives her the ring, and then she goes gives him a ring. She even makes a question on the wedding at the marriage, according to Rav Moshe's tshuva. It sounds like they only get married with both rings, which is not the case. But even she gives it to him afterwards, it's still, to my mind, not that appropriate, because it's coming from that place. I've been asked, but isn't it important for a man to wear a wedding ring? Because when he goes to work, and he's wearing a wedding ring, so the ladies will stay away from him. If he's not wearing a wedding, they're going to come running after him. It's a good question. Here's my answer. The answer is yes. It's important for a married man to wear a wedding ring at work, which is going to save him from women running after him. It's even more important for a single man. How's that? So what should he do? He gets out of the subway and he's going to work. He needs a protection. He should put his ring on, single or married, put the ring on to protect him from the propositioning of all these girls out there. When he gets back into the subway, he can take it off. That's a protection.
Now it's Adrav.
What do you mean?
Now that he's married and there's a lady who gives him a skama, so he's fair game because he's not going to beat you, he's not going to rape you. So you run after him, he has the ring.
That's true, really? I don't know. If they're running after, I have to go on online. If they're running after married men more than single men, you're not allowed to wear the wedding ring at work either. If a character's going to cause them to run after you. I always thought it was the other way around. But I guess one generation later, knows better than me. There's much more to be said, but my time is up. I want to thank you so much for your listening. I want to wish you all a tremendous bracha v'atzlacha.
It's just like a carrot. It's a minute. It's not as bad as someone who wants that.